Well, I'm Bev Harris.
And I'm Andy Stevenson.
Yep, I'm the author of Black Box Voting, and Andy is the Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. I think it's very important that he's here because we started doing some investigations together. We've done them off and on throughout the writing of the book, but we started kind of seriously doing something about 2 weeks ago. And much of what we're going to be revealing here today is actually stuff that Andy uncovered, and then we worked together to develop it. It does bring, as I put in my initial teaser, it does bring concerns about our voting system to a whole new level. What we have in Washington State is this. We've got the state elections director, David Elliott, misstating when versions were certified. We have somebody at the Secretary of State's office signing off on software that doesn't have a NASED number to authorize it, which is required by state law. When we try to find out what software is actually being used, we're getting the Buffalo Shuffle. And we've got a convicted drug dealer printing our ballots and our punch cards. We also have had, for the past, up until a little under a year ago, a 23-count embezzler dealing with our voting registration base and having his hands directly in the central tabulating system that counts 800,000 votes in King County. We have documented that we're using unauthorized software, and the internal memos that we are going to provide indicate that 5 Diebold programmers have been uploading this, knowing they were not supposed to, in as many as 14 states. So, with that being said, let's pass some of these around. If you're media, grab first. And I'll take you on a guided tour through what we have here, which I really only promised you 20 pages, and I think this is longer, and we could have gone on and on. If you open it up, the first thing you'll see is this boring little chart. Let me tell you the adventure we have had to go to try to find out what software is actually authorized. Understand something. If you have software and the entire thing is proprietary and secret, and the entire premise of why this is safe is based on the fact that it goes through independent testing and certification. If instead you actually have 5 individual guys up in Canada sticking unauthorized programs directly into our voting machines, we've got a security breach of the first degree. This is not an isolated incident. This has been happening all over the United States for at least 6 years. What we tried to do, now the way that you find out if it's certified or not is in most states, it has to have what's called a NASED number. It stands for the National Association of State Election Directors. And they put it through the lab, which is an independent testing authority, which gives it a number, and then they issue a number. In Washington State, you cannot use software in a voting machine unless it has a NASED number. Therefore, if we want to know if it's certified or not, we go and look and see what the NASED numbers are, the complete set, and is it on that list or not? For some reason, trying to find that list of what's certified has been unbelievable. Andy called the Election Center, which is the national body that has been trying to look up, or supposedly looking over this. The director of the Election Center hung up on him when he asked for the list. I called the Secretary of State's office. They said, we'll have to have someone call you back. They never did. Linda France, who's an activist who works out of Bellingham, finally found one document by going through an obscure link in a back door on the Johnson County, Kansas website. But this was even out of date. I spent probably 4 hours searching something called the Wayback Engine, which goes and finds things that were on the web and have been taken off the web. I was able to locate 3 more lists, but we just haven't been able to get that list. The most recent list we had was over a year old. And So I did a breach of protocol. I was supposed to testify before the Washington Legislature, the Technology Committee. Our state elections director, David Elliott, testified right before me. I got in front of the legislative committee and turned to him and said, "Mr. Elliott, we're here in Olympia. Why don't you get your cell phone, call your office. I'll pick up those documents before we leave because you can't certify anything unless you know what the numbers are." And David Elliott has been on the NASED board for certification for nearly a decade. Well, I got called out. You don't do that in front of the legislature. It was a breach of protocol, and he was not happy. But that and two more emails finally did pin him down to at least give me a list, which he still contends is not current. And he says he doesn't know whether or not anything else has been certified, and he'll have to call the FEC. Now, understand something. We just ran an election in September and in November on software that is not on that NASED list. We have our state elections director can't even tell us if it's certified or not. And this particular thing was one of a bunch of documents he gave me with Post-it. This is his writing. "I had this fax from the FEC today since I can't find the NASED webpage." That's right, they took it off. They don't want those version numbers seen. There's a reason for that, and that's because we've been using unauthorized software all over the U.S. It hasn't even been looked at by anyone except the programmers, whoever they are. Something else that's interesting. You see something in handwriting down here. Well, that's the version that was used in the last two elections. Unfortunately, it does not have a NASED number. We know it doesn't have a NASED number because we called the state of California, which actually gives straight answers. So he wrote in there that it was. It's not. Then you see this other little thing here where he tries to write over this little number and say, this is certified. It's not. And actually it correlates with the number right next to it. And you can see that writing over it does not change the fact that this number is ends in 15. This is really annoying. We have a state elections director who won't tell us what's certified. So I'm going to take you on a guided tour here. In your packet, you're going to see a thick item called Use of Unauthorized Voting Programs. This is going to document case after case after case after case of putting the programs directly from the computers in Canada into our voting system. And in some cases, it's done by people on site. In Snohomish County, I was on the Mike Webb show a couple weeks ago. Bob Terwilliger, who's the county auditor, was on there. He admitted on the air that his staff member had written program modifications. This is illegal. We don't know what his staff member wrote. It's probably for a legitimate reason. But if they're going to keep this secret and we're not allowed to see it, we can't have just anybody in there tinkering. King County, we'll talk about the guy who was dealing with the GEMS program in King County. There was a gentleman who had the keys to the computer, had 24-hour access to the computer room. He could go in 24/7. And he had access to both the entire voter registration system, which contains personal information, which, by the way, can be used by identity thieves and for all kinds of purposes we don't want. And he also, his job was supposedly to take that and integrate it with the central tabulation system at the county, which means he was messing with the GEMS program. It sounds really boring. When I first put this stuff on the web, which I did, by the way, on September 12th. It was the first set of Diebold memos to ever appear in public. That's why Diebold has been hitting us with cease and desist every 2 minutes. It's because they know. The selection I put on the web was 24 memos that documented they were using uncertified software in a number of states. That came down in about 24 hours. They know that this pulls the rug out of the entire electronic voting system that we've got set up. You can't have a system where people are willy-nilly making changes in the program if the programming is secret and there's no auditing. So you'll have fun going through this. In this, we also have copies of the emails to Andy Stevenson and to myself, which document King County has been using uncertified software. And David Elliott comes up with these cockamamie reasons. I asked him why we're using a version called 1.11.2, which has never been certified anywhere. And he makes up all this stuff. None of it's true. He tells me that the thing was actually certified in 1992, and it just changed the name. No, it wasn't even invented until 1999. I have the original software and all of the memos and release notes. And so anyway, this is a concern. What this literally means is we have no idea what's in our voting system. Anybody could put any kind of a rig they want. Now, it's probably, let's hope, that all these programmers are honest and all they wanted to do was fix bugs or help to generate some kind of a new report or add features. But what do we really know? I mean, we don't know who these people are. We don't know what they're doing. And that's not how the system is set up. That's not how it was sold to us as voters. We were told that this stuff was going to be looked at and tested. To give you an idea of how frequently this happens, in fact, I just love this. I'm going to give you this great quote. There it is, right on the front page. This is from Lynn Landis, who's actually the reporter that first got me started looking at this. She wrote back in September of 2002, "As far as we know, some guy from Russia could be programming our software." Well, now we know. Lynn, meet Dmitry Popishin from Vancouver, who has uploaded uncertified software onto the web for use in the United States 180 times. We have Ken Clark. I also listed a bunch of... Ken Clark is really, really irrelevant. Irrelevant. Anyway, he writes a lot of really damaging things. He probably should never get anywhere near email. I don't think that necessarily says anything about his character, but he has some very damaging information in his emails, and in his emails he frequently demonstrates that they know darn well they're not supposed to be doing this. Anyway, you can go through that at your own leisure. And it goes through some of the characters. Would you like to talk about the absentee ballot thing we came up with?
Sure.
This is also Andy's story. I'm just hijacking it.
That's okay. She tells it so well. absentee ballots. Most of us think that when we receive our absentee ballots and send them off, that they're secure. And in some cases, that's true. But in King County, there's a middleman, and there's no regulations, criminal background checks, nothing to supervise these people. King County's been subcontracting the processing of absentee ballots for its 500,000 absentee ballots to Diebold to a company called PSI, a private for-profit company. This company is out of Omaha, Nebraska. Now, according to the community release plan obtained for two felons by the name of Jeffrey W. Dean and John Elder, the absentee ballot sorting firm, PSI Group, had agreed to hire them both upon leaving prison. After they served their time for drug dealing and embezzlement. Now, these are the guys that are taking care of your absentee ballots in King County. There's two ways to manipulate the absentee ballot. One is vote suppression, just outright losing them.
And on the way to you.
On the way to you, where a voter will have to call in and get another ballot, but you may or may not get it. Vote reduction, lose or replace incoming ballots for a portion of voters in key precincts. PSI Group initially sorted just the outgoing ballots to put them into zip code, however the post office requires you to do it. Now, PSI employees have access to the highest risk attack point for absentee ballot security. They're they're sorting and putting into precinct groups the incoming ballots. You'd think they would go to King County, but they're not going to King County. They're going to this other group, who, by the way, has several people that were hired directly out of prison, or they're immigrants, which I'm not against immigrants. I have no problem with that. But I do have a problem with people that are not, have had no background checks. We have no clue to who these people are. There's no chain of custody on these ballots. It would make sense to sort the precincts and count. It would make no sense for King County to, they say, oh, well, we sort the ballots before we send them out.
Or they say if they say anything, we count the ballots when we get them, and then we give them over to PSI.
And then
PSI. So that would be a cross-check if they just lose some ballots.
Right.
However.
But it makes no sense, because on some days, King County is receiving up to 60,000 ballots a day. They're not staffed to deal with the incoming ballots.
And if they were sorting and putting them into precincts and counting, why would they send them out to be sorted? That makes no sense.
Exactly.
We've spoken to people inside. Some people are understandably reluctant to come forward publicly, but we have been speaking to people inside the King County Election Division, and they tell us that it doesn't happen. These things go to PSI Inc. uncounted. And understand what that means. We know how many ballots we send out. We have no idea how many come back in. If you just lose the key precincts and say, wow, there's a low turnout there. And by the way, as I was checking for anomalies when I was writing this book, something that did not make it into the book, but I noticed, is very often there are anomalies in elections where suddenly, at the last minute, 10,000 new absentee ballots show up. Have you noticed that? Well, this is starting to make me very nervous, because we don't have an inventory system that takes those things in and counts them so we know who the heck sent their ballot in. We're just handing them over to whoever, and they're doing whatever with them. That means basically our absentee ballot system is even weaker than electronic voting with no paper trail. Why don't you go into the voter registration lists? Because you're from Texas.
Yes. That's a wonderful thing. Security issues, voter security concerns. By now, most of you are aware of the 40,000 files that Diebold left on the web. But they also left, in my home state of Texas, 310,000 voter basically 310,000 voters' private, personal information out on a website, which included a couple of my friends. They are not happy about this, believe me. Basically, right now, if you have a person's name and birth date, you can find out their address and everything about them. If you have their name and address, you can find out their birth date, which opens a whole new gamut of identity theft. You can also have, for example, have an abusive spouse and you've gotten away from this person and you want to be patriotic, now you have to worry about, well, do I register to vote or do I just not vote, because my ex-husband may be able to find me through King County voter registration. Now, that process, again, has now been handed over to Diebold, I believe, isn't it?
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's another one of these...
Oh, that I believe that was Mr. 23 Count Embezzlement.
23
that
Counts
got
of Embezzlement,
that for
right.
Us.
Right.
Yes.
So I think that brings us around to and up to...
How many felons does it take to count a vote? Well, we started looking, and, what we did was we actually went up to Vancouver, Andy and I, and started, and we found up there three felons from Vancouver who had founded the company a decade ago. It's been a while. But these guys, by the way, were there for 5 years, and they hired two of the key programmers who have been uploading this uncertified stuff. In 1988, they formed a company And they hired two programmers by the name of Talbot Iredale and Guy Lancaster, whose mission was to develop the optical scan system for the United States. This system is now in 37 states, as well as King County. These two men were hired by convicted felons. Let me tell you what they did. We have, you know, the most mild situation, Charles Hong Lee. The only thing he really did wrong was bilk investors out of money. He was ordered to pay $555,000 in restitution. And I never did find out the resolution to the second issue, which is he was accused of bilking Chinese immigrants out of several million dollars and laundering the funds through the Cayman Islands. The second guy, Norton Cooper, was not, you won't find his name in the corporate documents, but you'll find his name whenever you're looking for someone who was marketing this early company and telling people we needed voting machines. Here's how some of these voting machines got started in the United States, folks. It was Norton Cooper coming down and making presentations. Norton Cooper did jail time for defrauding the Canadian government. He was written up in by Barron's magazine as a hazard to avoid on the golf course because nearly single-handedly he brought, almost by himself, brought down the Vancouver Stock Exchange with so many fraudulent transactions. He had help. His help was his partner, Michael K. Gray, who became the director of Global Election Systems for 2 years. Michael K. Gray, before he took over Global Election Systems, had stolen $18 million from four companies in Canada. He stepped down from Global Election System to be prosecuted, basically. They assigned $1 million bail to him. He couldn't come up with it. So he set up a shell company in Hong Kong and took investments. I believe people thought they were buying an island, and they were actually paying his bail. However, he defaulted on the bail because while he was awaiting trial, he was arrested in the United States for stock fraud. And he didn't leave the United States for 4 years because he was in prison. He then went back to Canada, and he was imprisoned again in Canada, where he still is. So this is the beginnings of the company. And we don't know if there's any more people with troublesome backgrounds because the courthouse closed by that time and we had to come home. But we only actually looked in the criminal section. We didn't even get to the civil litigation section. Again, I find that not the greatest pedigree for the company that is now, the machines that are now counting 52% of the votes in the United States. But it gets better because, yes. Andy is schmoozing, he goes and meets more people. You can tell him. Oh, about the current two guys. Oh, I will. Do you want?
Who's that, Mr.?
Oh, we've got Mr. Jeffrey Dean.
Jeffrey Dean, yeah, you can.
Oh, okay, I'll do this. Okay, well, Jeffrey Dean is the fellow who has had access. Jeffrey Dean, actually, they could have told that he was a felon just by reading the Seattle Times. He was in a high-profile embezzlement case, actually embezzled from one of the most famous law firms in King County. And let me just read you what it says on his conviction. Defendant's thefts occurred over a 2.5-year period of time. There were multiple incidents, more than the standard range can account for. The actual monetary loss was substantially greater than typical for the offense. The crimes and their cover-up involved a high degree of sophistication and planning in the use and alteration of records in the computerized accounting system, which, by the way, is what he was hired to program for King County.
Yeah, if you'll remember, this is the gentleman that had 24-hour, 7-day-a-week access to the King County Elections Building.
All the way up till December 31st, 2002, by the way.
And he also had a key to the computer room.
Yes. It also says the defendant used his position of trust and responsibility as a computer systems and accounting consultant for the victim to facilitate the commission of his offenses. Now, this is a man who handles our voter registration information and handles the tabulation of 800,000 votes in King County, but he's not allowed, according to his sentence, to handle any checks. When he was in prison, where he was for 4 or 5 years, he met John Elder, and they became close friends. John Elder was in for an offense that I will say disturbs me less as these things go. He was in for cocaine dealing, and he was in for 5 years. When they both came out, they listed that they were going to PSI Group, John Elder still has a position with Diebold Election Systems. He runs a division. His division prints the it prints all the ballots, actually, and it prints the punch cards. And it prints them not just for King County, but for several states. It printed them for Maryland and some other places. There's a lot of things you can do if you have a printing contract, especially for punch cards. In fact, although I don't spend a lot of time on punch cards, in the book that I wrote, you've got the way that you rig a punch card system, the easiest way is to selectively die cut it. In other words, the undesired candidate, his punches are hard to punch out. And the other one, you can literally blow them out with a strong puff of air by simply setting the die cut a certain way. So again, you don't want to have a convicted felon printing punch cards. And you also don't want to have him printing optical scan ballots. Now, this is something that I haven't been able to prove, but a reporter for the Oakland Trib down in Alameda County. You know, Alameda County in California had a problem on the night of the governor's recall. They had all Diebold touchscreens, and they couldn't seem to get their results in. And so, finally, according to the reporter, he said, although this wasn't in the press, there was a group of Diebold people who were huddled in an office with the door locked for nearly 4 hours. And everybody wondered what problem they were having. Well, when they came out, they said, and the reporter took it, they said, what it was the Spanish language ballots did not read correctly because the Spanish translation threw everything off by half a line and the optical scanner couldn't read it. Unfortunately, that's not possible with the way that the software works.
Exactly.
Because you cannot move the little oval that is filled in. You can change the text, but the oval won't move. Well, guess who printed the ballots? We have a situation where Spanish language speaking people may not have gotten their vote counted correctly. Now, these are some very not too subtle situations that have cropped up. And when you combine the fact that we are using software that we have no idea what's in state after state after state, with the fact that we're not doing any background checks, we have a problem, I think, what you would call a security defect of severity one. People tell me I'm an alarmist, but I'm a little alarmed. We don't have audit trails in place for this. People keep talking about this as though it's a computer programming challenge. It is not. It's a public policy problem. And it's the way to deal with it is never going to be setting up a new level of testing. They've just said, don't worry about it. We're switching the testing over to the National Institute for Standards and Testing, or whatever that is, NIST. Well, they're not going to be able to tell us what to do if you have an embezzler reprogramming GEMS. And what we have here is whatever it is they looked at isn't even in what's in the computer, so throw that out. What we need to do is audit. We just need to be able to check and make sure these things counted right. And even with the optical scans, we simply do not have appropriate procedures set up that are, you know, designed for the 21st century. So it's not an overwhelming situation, but it is a situation, I mean, it is overwhelming, but it's not an impossible situation. It's not even necessarily terribly expensive, but we have got to get some hearings. I think what we found here merits not just a King County hearing, but a United States Congress investigation. How did this company get to the point where it's counting 52% of the votes in the United States, and we have, without even finishing, it took one day, 5 convicted felons. And they only have 20 people who work there. This is not a good corporate culture. Now, they may all be great guys, and they may have cleaned everything up, but if they cleaned everything up, how come the senior vice president, as of December 31st, 2001, was this embezzler, and he was then paid another $144,000 to stay on for another year after Diebold took over? And why do we still have this guy printing our ballots? So we have some issues, and I like to say, by the way, I don't endorse candidates at all. They keep coming to me and asking, and what I say is, I don't want to hear what you have to say in a speech. Show me what you can do. Well, Dennis Kucinich did something. He put the memos on his website, and he challenged Diebold to come and get him, and they backed down, and now we can look at the memos legally. Here's an... There's another person who's done things. Okay? When it, rather than saying, I'm going to go on the stump and start making speeches and run and raise money, he went out there and said, I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and started digging up court records and interviewing people in the elections office and finding out what the heck is really happening. That impresses me. And I would do this for him, too, because all of this stuff came from him. And you have solutions.
I have solutions. Well, as candidate for Secretary of State, I feel that voting is the most important responsibility of the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is charged with maintaining the public trust in the systems that run and count elections. Assuring the vote is fair and that every citizen's voice is heard is an overriding concern of election officials. Today I call on these officials to make a clear and public accounting of their own systems. The public has a right to know when uncertified and unapproved software is counting an election. And it also has a right to have those elected officials explain clear violations of the law. For the law states that software running these machines must be approved and tested and analyzed by independent testing authorities before it is used in voting machines. And when software technicians installs a patch or does an upgrade to any part of the system, then that system has been compromised, and unless that patch or upgrade has been certified. David Elliott, State of Washington Director of Elections, Dave, who's charged with certifying software, has to date not provided us with a full and complete accounting of approved and certified software versions. Mr. Elliott has also reportedly responsible for entering the computer room on primary night 2000 and uploading a tabulation software update that was not approved nor was it certified. Bob Terwilliger of Snohomish County admitted on the Mike Webb Show that there was an uncertified patch applied to the Sequoia machines in Snohomish County. Today, Sam Reed, the current Secretary of State, announced that we're going to have a paper audit trail. Great, but that doesn't go far enough. What we want is a voter-verified paper ballot. Nothing less will do. It's our vote. We also need to put and institute a robust fraud-deterring audit process. Right now, it's so haphazard, we don't know if it's being done right or not. As most of you know already, the touchscreens around the country being implemented under the effects of the HAVA Act have come under fire by many people. The reason that these systems, these companies are, and our election officials are quietly trying to bamboozle the public... Wait, let me back up on that. I totally lost my mind. The reason is that these systems, these companies and our election officials are quietly trying to bamboozle us into accepting these machines. I don't. The machines are so grievously flawed, people around the country have banded together to counter this threat to democracy and make no mistake about it, it is a threat to our democracy. The security breaches with the software also transfer to the people that are doing the programming, installing, and running of the systems, as we've seen here today. We have, you know, pretty bad people working on these things. Diebold Election Systems software was left unprotected on a website. The internal memos from Diebold show a pattern of deception. In King County, your absentee ballot is handled by a private firm, and the chain of command cannot be insured. I've also requested from Klickitat County via a public records request and numerous phone calls for their certification information, and as of today, I still have not received it. I've been stonewalled, and this has been a month ago that I requested this. I was told by a woman by the name of Jean in El Paso County, Texas, my home county. When I asked her what version of GEMS database they were using, I was told by her that it was, quote, none of your business. The outright stonewalling of election officials, all this adds up to problems. We need to have hearings. We need to be demanding that Congress investigate this now. And we also need to be demanding a paper ballot immediately. In fact, I would go as far as to say that we don't even want machines counting the ballots in the next election. It should be a hand-counted paper ballot election, because we can't be sure. We cannot be sure.
Okay. Well, I had promised it 20-page dossier, and I think this ended up to be something like 30. We've uploaded this onto blackboxvoting.org so that anybody can get it. I have lots more. I probably have 200 pages more of these documents. So if I've left something out that's needed to connect the dots, let me know. For those of you in the press who are looking at verifying this, now that you have the names to look for, it's not that difficult. There's two databases. One is secinfo.com. It's the Securities and Exchange Commission documents, and they have a lot of these things in this information in there. And there's one called cedar.com, S-E-D-A-R. That gives you the Canadian securities documents. And you will find a lot of this is in there. What they didn't do is disclose their convictions. That's what you won't find. And I think this also pops loose, you know, I think it's about time that it stops being just citizens like me and Andy who feel like sometimes we're walking the gangplank because we have so many threats from these companies that they're going to sue us and they're going to damage us. In fact, there's a memo that's been circulated in King County about how they're going to dig up some dirt on me and find something bad. Mind you, they hadn't found anything. They just want to find something bad. And they're going to make sure that my reputation suffers. You know, this kind of, by the way, I would wonder if that it doesn't come under some sort of conspiracy to defame legally. I have that memo. But we should not, as private citizens, have to keep sticking our neck out, taking the risks I've had to take this year. And frankly, I'm not talking about being in fear for my life. I'm talking about within days of posting anything, I had cease and desist and threats to sue, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen to you if you don't back off. You talked to Bob Yurosevich.
Mr. Yurosevich, yes. The president of Diebold Election Systems. When I was working with Bev, I would make phone calls for her because I'm really adept at making phone calls and getting information from people. I happened to speak with Mr. Yurosevich, and Mr. Yurosevich told me that if I didn't back off, I was going to get a visit. So I preempted him. I went to Vancouver and visited all his friends.
Yes. By the way, some of these programmers live in million-dollar homes with $8,000 TVs. Wonderful little dogs that are purebred, but who knows?
While others live in beautiful Tudor homes with a river runs through it. And then still others
live in the most
unsavory conditions you can imagine.
Quite tawdry. But at any rate, I think we are at the point where the press needs, we're going to start needing some real investigative reporting out of the mainstream press. I think it's about time people stop calling people like me a black helicopter person or a conspiracy theorist. Every single story I've broken over a year and 2 months has checked out. Most of the time it's been reported then in the Washington Post, on CNN. All they do is strip my name out. This is... And then tell me I'm a conspiracy theorist, where they just printed my stuff.
The black helicopter theorist.
Yes. That's the latest thing, by the way. Yes. That just came out again in the New York Times. We are black helicopter theorists and conspiracy nuts who don't really have our feet in the real world. Well, I'm sorry, but I think the Department of Corrections documents are the real world. We need to get some investigation, and these kinds of documents are going to pop forth some amazing things. Those of you who are investigative reporters can really have a scoop. I'll tell you where I would go very next thing. You have this guy, he gets out of prison. He has $87 in his prison bank account. He owes $380,000 of restitution. 2 months later, he owns a print and graphic shop. Do you know how much that stuff costs? How did that happen? You're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in investment. Who bankrolled that? You find that name. And by the way, he didn't incorporate it in Washington State. It was in Mount Lake Terrace. He incorporated it in Burnaby, Canada, which is a suburb of Vancouver where Global Election Systems is.
Just down the street.
Yes. Who bankrolled this guy? I think we find that, and we're going to get the keys to the kingdom. We're going to know exactly what's going on with this stuff. Because... I don't see how you end up with that kind of a business when maybe it's just me, if I had only $87 and a judgment against me for $380,000, which he still has not paid, I would feel strapped financially. Feel a little pressure. Anyway, so there's a lot of things that we can start looking into. We didn't even have, I say we have 10 states that are not certified, have stuff that's not certified. We didn't even, I mean, this is like, we just threw a question out on blackboxvoting.org and said, hey, everybody, see if you can check this out. That was like a week of phone calls. And most of them refused to tell us. So I think that there's a long ways to go with this. And as I said recently, even though we're starting to get the paper ballots in some places, it's not till end of 2004 or 2006, and it's got all these qualifiers. I would say that the starting gun has gone off, but we are a long ways from the finish line. And as Andy said, we've got elections coming up in 2 months. We do not have time to fix this system. If we have to go back to the old way temporarily for a couple of elections, for primaries, and use the old-fashioned system, then that's what we need to do. We cannot use this stuff. And by the way, in the uncertified counties in Washington State are King County,
Klickitat, Chelan.
San Juan was certified. Oh, Snohomish. So, and that's just what we've been able to find.
A lot of the county auditors have been real forthcoming, but then still others have been less than happy to hear from me.
Okay.
And have stonewalled us.
So that's all. Oh yes, a question.
Have y'all ever went to one particular county and actually got all the right answers? Because I know you can't cover the entire United States, but have you ever, like, called county and then the software checked out and they told you and bring you the information and stuff?
But, we don't spend a huge amount of time. When they say okay, we usually move on to the next one, There are, like, for example, San Juan County is using a certified version. However, they put in an uncertified chip into their optical scan software. So it's not the county official's fault.
No.
It really isn't. It's the fault of the election company, the vendors who are selling this stuff, who are sending their text down and saying, you can do this. And it certainly is the fault of the state officials who know better and know about this, by the way. Any other questions?
Didn't you say, though, that it was, in fact, election officials and the people making the equipment who were trying to bamboozle us? Are you specifying it's only state officials, not county officials?
Occasionally, I think there are problems with county officials.
Yeah, I've had some, some stonewalling from county officials. For example, Klickitat. I put in a public records request over a month ago, and like I said, to date, I have still not received the certification information from them.
But I would say a lot of the county elections people may not know how critical it is to make sure those version numbers match. And by the way, we haven't been able to get the numbers, so I would assume they haven't been able to get the list either. Yes?
One thing I'd like to say is that the most alarming aspect of the HAVA Act is the fact that the federal government is saying we want to remove the power of county registered voters and county votes from the county up to the state level.
Right.
Centralizing that. That scares me even more than anything about the HAVA Act. So,
Right. Yeah,
we can talk to county officials, but they're not going to be anybody.
They're powerless. The other thing is we are going to need to get legislation in place to get financial disclosure on all state officials who are dealing with our vote. Right now, they don't have to disclose anything.
Not a thing.
With all these cases, either the people with criminal records or the uncertified software,
yes. Yes. Volusia County, Florida. Oh, here in King County? Actually, we haven't even had time to go through that. What we would need to have is copies of the software.
Which we don't have, and they won't give us. I challenged Mr. Terwilliger of Snohomish County. I had a meeting with him in his office, and I asked him point blank. I said, would you let me bring in some computer experts and allow us to have access to one of the machines to see if, if they are secure, if we could basically hack into the thing. And he said, well, I'll think about it. And I called into the Mike Webb show when Bev was on, and I reiterated again, and he seemed to think that it would turn into a, quote, dog and pony show. Maybe, maybe not. I think it's our voting system that we're vetting. So I think it would behoove us all to start asking Mr. Terwilliger, hey, we want to check out a machine.
Yeah. Next time you get a chance to look at this player machine in the back, there's a little yellow button. Push the button, that changes it from vote to supervisor mode, and password is 1111.
What's not password? I heard it was password.
It's 1111.
And by the way, the state officials still just don't get it. The state of Nevada said, well, we're going to buy touchscreen machines. We're going to ask for a receipt. It's not a receipt. It's a ballot. But we're going to get Sequoia, not Diebold, because Sequoia did not leave their stuff on an open website. Well, yes, they did. It's there for a year and a half. And scientists are looking at that now. It's a time-consuming process to, look at the software. I have made, at this point, an open invitation to someone to reverse engineer the Rob Georgia patch, because that needs to be reverse engineered. It's not in source code, it's in compiled form. That's an illegal patch. I think we have an absolute right to reverse engineer it. I also do have some source code and some compiled files that are specifically tagged to King County. I have not a clue what to do with them. But I think we are at the point now where we need to take these program files and start pulling them apart and say, what is in there? Because we need to know. And
What level of certification, in the certification process, what level of disclosure is there if not, source code?
Oh, well, they
when
send
you say
the stuff to.
Certified, what does that really mean?
Oh, yeah, the certification process anyway doesn't work. Assuming we did all the things right and we send it to this national lab and they do whatever it is they do, they won't answer any questions about what they do, by the way, or what their credentials are. Mm-hmm. But, the stuff that did get through certification was identified by the SAIC report to have 328 security flaws, 26 deemed critical. And then Ohio State commissioned an independent study of all the manufacturers, all the top four, and all four were found to have critical security flaws, multiple critical security flaws. So if the certification system worked, those things would have been caught. And I can tell you, and I'll get to this, I can tell you that this central tabulation system in King County, there's no way this thing was certified by anyone who even had any attempt to try to do it right, because I could hack it and I don't know anything about computers. I bypassed the password, overwrote the audit log. All you have to do is be able to double click a file and type, because there's a back door that's right there. Yeah.
Why is it so complicated? I'm beginning to wonder if maybe the complication is built into it. I've done programming a simple text file at the loading capture point. There isn't anything to look at. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. It's either here or it's there.
That's right.
There's no need for a database at the loading site. Why do they insist on a database at the loading machine level?
Well, And when you say that, people often ask, what my background is and all this stuff, and I'm a writer, but three projects that I had in the early 90s had to do with specifically financial fraud and embezzlement, and they were quite detailed. I spent, months going through records and stuff. One symptom of an embezzler is that he makes it complicated. Absolutely. The best programmers, it's clean, it's easy to understand, they can explain it, people like me can understand it. So if it's very complicated and obtuse, you have to wonder what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
When the Australians built their computerized system,
right,
it took them $150,000.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and it only costs $400 for a machine to run it. Now, here's a problem. We also have privatized this system, and there is a profit motive involved, and a profit motive is not appropriate for a public trust right now. So anyway.
I presume you haven't traced these people back. You've seen their felonies. You don't know their earliest childhood incidents.
Well, we know that they were. Some of them were friends in Winnipeg.
From Winnipeg.
But it sounds like what they could do with that, they've got one in every machine, right? So they basically have access to that whole chain of all the information for anybody else that might be embezzlable in the United States.
It's a situation. People want to, take what we got and put a Band-Aid on it. And here's basically what we need to do. We made a couple of fundamental errors when we first set this up. One was we had computer guys designing the voting system instead of having people who understood accounting and constitutional law and history saying, what is it we need? It's like you have the tech division of a company telling what should be done when actually, you know, the marketing folks and the CEO and stuff are supposed to say, this is the product we're going to come out with. These are the specs. Design it to spec. That's not what we did. We've just sort of been designing as we go, just making it up as we go. We need to bring in the right kind of expertise. And one thing is we haven't even asked accountants. One of the things I say in here is a bookkeeper from Las Vegas is more qualified to set up accounting for our voting system than a computer scientist from Princeton because they know how people go around things. This is a people problem. It's not how you program it. And we also need somebody who has an understanding of history so they understand what the founding fathers had in mind when they started this country. They said, we the people. That means all of us are supposed to be involved, and they felt that it was critical, not just important, but critical, that the vote be in as many hands as possible. The exact opposite of that is they didn't say, we the computer scientists, or we the cryptography experts. They said, we the people. And we need somebody who has that understanding of what this country is supposed to be founded on to give input when we're designing these nifty new systems. I think we really have about... Yeah?
Las Vegas. The Ammon machine people looked at the software for the election stuff and they shook their heads. No way.
No way. Except Diebold's pushing it. Can somebody go out there and tell a really nice gentleman to come in? The African American one who is. This is my husband. This is the man who's put up with a year and 2 months of no income and threats. And I'm going to say just a brief thing about this. This is the new chapter one in the book that you haven't seen. If it's okay. Anthony Dudley was a mulatto from Lee's Mill, North Carolina. And he was undereducated. And he wanted two things. He wanted to be able to vote and to make sure his children were educated. This was just after the Civil War had torn the country apart, and they couldn't quite decide what they wanted to do with all these African Americans who didn't really want them to vote. The North didn't want them to vote. The South kind of thought it was okay. They passed the amendment in 1870 that authorized the vote, and so Anthony thought, well, now all I have to do is make sure my children are educated. Well, his son Will found out it wasn't all that easy because they started banding together things like the Ku Klux Klan. They started preventing folks from voting. But he vowed he was going to vote, his kids were going to vote, and they were going to be educated. He had 8 children that he put through college. All of them got a college degree except one. And this is, by the way, about 1900. They all got a college degree except one, his son David Dudley. David got interrupted from his college career at North Carolina Tech, A&T, North Carolina A&T, because he noticed that it was election time. This is around 1920, or whenever it was, and people were afraid to vote. If they even went and registered, they would be on a list, and they would get a visit at night. So he spent the next year driving around the state, telling people that they needed to vote anyway and have the courage to vote. His son, Jerome, was the most pissed off Dudley. He was in the 60s. It was 100 years since this amendment had been passed, and people were still blocking the vote. So he became a student body leader at North Carolina A&T, fought for civil rights, fought for the vote, and it was in this climate that Sonny Dudley grew up. Sonny was in community theater. He's got a booming voice. First thing he did when he was old enough, said, I will vote. No one's going to stop me. And he cast his vote for Eldridge Cleaver. We married 7 years ago, sat and watched the Florida fiasco. I'm sitting there just horrified at what they're doing to these poor old folks in Palm Beach County. It's a violation of their civil rights. They're not getting their vote counted correctly. And he's sitting there with this quizzical look on his face, and he says, doesn't feel too good when they do it to the white folks, does it? No, it doesn't. I think it's time we need to get together and go take back our vote, whatever it takes.
got here late and you want one of these packets, we have a few left.